The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 168.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone back to the Rebel Capitalist Show. He is an OG Rebel Capitalist, that is for sure. He's one of my great buddies, Robert Kiyosaki. He needs no introduction. Robert, welcome back to the Rebel Capitalist Show, my friend.
Well, George, not to be a mutual admiration society, but, you know, hanging out with you in Jekyll Island, Georgia, and then now you're here in Phoenix and all this, and actually getting to know George outside of the screen is another interesting process, because I get to observe him when he's not on screen. And George does go down the rabbit hole. He is the most active, interested learner. He's always learning. And that's nice to see, because a lot of people are very superficial, but you're a very curious person. You always want to learn. So I've noticed your focus is a laser. Anyway, so that's the, for those who do not have the pleasure of hanging out with George like I do now in Phoenix, is I get to see why he's so ahead of the game, because he's an active, very intense learner. So anyway, that's my two bits on that.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, but that kind of segues into exactly what I wanted to talk about today. Going back to the Red Pill Expo, where we were fortunate enough to speak a few weeks ago, G. Edward Griffin was nice enough to invite us both out there. You know, I stayed an extra day just so I could hear you speak. And I spoke on Saturday, you spoke on Sunday morning, and we had dinner, that was awesome. But when I went out there and spoke, and it was on this Great Reset, everyone, I think, was fascinated, and I got a ton of questions. And at the end, they were very appreciative, and you kind of get the golf clap. But when I watched you speak, it was on a completely different level. And if you recall, you were having some issues with your audio, and you were going right into this story. Well, you're about midway into this story. And as soon as your audio went out, you could hear the audience just go, oh, and oh, no. And they almost started crying. They're like, no, we got to hear the rest of the story. And I was sitting there with Kim, and right there, it dawned on me how powerful storytelling actually is, and how we as human beings really learn a lot better through storytelling. So that's what I wanted to do today. I wanted to get the brief story on how you were introduced to gold and things like real estate, Bitcoin, and then maybe the story behind why you're, like me, a little more skeptical of central planning and the Federal Reserve. So let's start with that story on gold. That's a great one.
By the way, Jekyll Island is where the Federal Reserve Bank was founded, is what created. So that's why it's such a prominent place in history. But gold started in Vietnam. I had just arrived there in January 1972, and I was a brand new pilot flying off a carrier, and I got this letter from my rich dad. He said, hey, Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. And we didn't know what that meant. What does that mean? So he took it off on August 15th, 71. So I was another pilot with there, and we were looking at the maps of Vietnam and said, hey, look, there's a gold mine here. And so we said, well, let's go look for gold. And we didn't know what gold looked like.
Right.
So we flew. I said, well, there's only one problem. The North Vietnamese just overran that position. So, and as always said, Marines aren't the brightest guys on earth. So we said, well, let's go see if we can find some anyway. So we flew into this village to negotiate a gold deal, because we thought we could get a discount since it was now behind enemy lines. So we disarmed, we landed our helicopter and walked into the gold mine place where the little lady was selling gold. And my co-pilot and I are standing there unarmed, surrounded by Vietnamese. And we're trying to negotiate gold. And I think gold was about $50 and it floated from 35 to 50. We thought we could get a discount, and she laughed at us.
Yeah.
That was my realization that we didn't know anything about money and we didn't know anything about gold.
Right.
But that's like what you say, you go down the rabbit hole. So, you know, how come I don't know anything about gold? Why don't we know about this stuff? And that's when, you know, you go, suspicion comes up, if you know what I mean. And yes, this woman knew more about gold, and she obviously didn't go to Harvard, and we were college graduates. And she says, spot. She kept saying the word spot. You threw the Vietnamese and all this stuff. And spot is the price of gold all over the world in U.S. dollars. Mm. And she knew more about it than I did. So that's when the carrier sailed to Hong Kong. And I bought my first gold coin in South African Kruger Rand. And I still have that Kruger Rand. I think I paid $50 for it. And today's probably worth $2,000. Mm. And it's kind of a reminder, by the way, I did move that Kruger Rand offshore. I don't keep it in America legally. That's how much I don't trust my government. But, you know, it kind of fits today because I don't know what's going on. I mean, how can social media run our world today?
Yeah.
Who's running the world? So it makes that little Kruger Rand more valuable. Because as you and I know, the world is kind of like Big Brother. Silicon Valley is Big Brother now. They can affect media. They can affect what people are saying. You have Black Lives Matter. And, you know, I got accused of being a racist. I'm going, what the heck is going on in this country?
Yeah, right.
So that's what makes gold a little bit more valuable today. So that's kind of my story.
And did you see what happened with Klaus the other day on Twitter?
No, what happened?
You know, the guy that runs the World Economic Forum, the guy who's talking about my Great Reset videos and what I talked, the guy I talked about at the expo. He wasn't on Twitter. He had some account, but they're all fake accounts. But he came onto Twitter just last week. It was like his first day on Twitter. And I've been having my assistant trying to get me a blue check mark by my Twitter account, because there's so many scam artists out there that are trying to use my name and scam people out of money. And every time she gets a reply from Twitter saying that they're currently not doing that, they're not going to be taking any more applications until sometime like mid-2021 for these blue check marks, right? And so I noticed that Klaus went on Twitter, let's say last Wednesday, and he instantly got a blue check mark. You see, so it just goes to show you, to your point, that social media, that all the animals are equal, but some animals are created more equal than the other animals. And, you know, so I don't want to go down that conspiracy path, but it is obvious that there's some people in this world where those social media rules don't apply to them.
Correct. And, you know, I'm not Republican or Democrat, though Trump is my friend. I respect a person's right to choose their political affiliations. But when somebody says, should Trump run again? I said, why would he run again when the election is controlled out of Silicon Valley?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a prayer.
Yeah.
That's, and so George, this is the last thing I'll say about political, is that the divide in America is so big today. I've never seen it this wide. People don't trust each other. You know, neighbors are not speaking to neighbors, and families are not speaking to families. So this is wider a country, so wide apart.
God. Yeah, I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but you know, you're a real student of human behavior, and I'd love to get your opinion on this quickly. I was reading an article the other day, and the hypothesis of the article is that in the United States and in Western civilization, we've moved further and further and further away from religion. And I'm not here to say well, that's good or bad. You know, that's a completely different discussion. But people do need meaning in their lives. So this person, his argument was the reason we have such divisiveness in the United States and our political system is because people are filling the void of religion with politics, and politics is now the new religion. And that's why people are so fanatical and people are so diehard. And we're seeing all the things that we're seeing today. And they extrapolated that to not only politics, but these people that are like a cult following with Tesla, or maybe like even, you know, I'm bullish on Bitcoin, but there's a cult following of Bitcoin where they treat it like a religion. And there's some other thing. And maybe you could argue that maybe even for some gold bugs, treat it like a religion. But that was the whole argument, that we've replaced religion with all of these other things that may be potentially detrimental. But I think it explains a lot. What do you think about that?
That's funny you say that, because last night I had dinner with one of my best friend's sons, and these two young men went to Air Force Academy, and they're now working. One guy's living in Washington State. He said he made the mistake of buying a house in the middle of Antifa country.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Is that an Indian tribe? But the point is, George, is people are like tribaling. You know, they're going to smaller tribes. You have the white supremacy of Antifa, you have Black Lives Matter. So I think you're correct. There's something, people are searching for some kind of
meaning.
Yeah, meaning of, in life, what they believe in. So,
all right, well, let's get back on track. Let's hear the story about what got you. I know that you got introduced to real estate when you were a kid, but when did you start investing in real estate on your own? Tell us that story.
Well, I come back from Vietnam, so this is in 73, and you know, I was a Marine pilot, and I had no money, and so I go to see my old man, poor dad, and he says, well, why don't you fly for the airlines? And I said, I'm a helicopter pilot.
A little different.
You don't want me flying your airline for you, because we fly a little differently, you know. But, and then he wanted me to go, get my PhD and all that stuff that he did. And I said, I don't want to do that. So I talked to my rich dad, and he said, what should I do? He said, well, you should become an entrepreneur and buy real estate. So, yeah, I'm like 27 years old. I go, but I don't have any money. I mean, how do I become an entrepreneur and buy real estate if I don't have any money?
Right.
Rich dad just cracks up. He says, you answer that question, you'll be a rich man.
All right.
And so I'll leave that with everybody here, you know, because the reason I was commending you about always being curious is most people stop when they can't do something. And so when he said to me, when you figure out how you can be an entrepreneur and invest in real estate and not have any money, then you'll be a rich man. So it becomes the perpetual riddle.
Yeah,
that makes sense to you. So we all have different riddles in our heads. And that was my riddle. I said, how do I do this? And so I'm watching television in Honolulu with Waikiki, still flying for the Marine Corps. And this TV ad comes on and says, see, you too can make money in real estate with no money down. Mm. So since I had no money, I signed up.
You put the bill.
I said, that's me. But they kept their promise. They taught me how to make money without money. And that's how I started buying real estate. But that led me into the next thing, is how do I start a business without money? And that's what entrepreneurs do. You did the same thing. I do the same thing. But most people stop at, I can't do it.
Right.
Do you know? So it becomes an addiction in many ways. It's, okay, what is the next challenge, should I say? How do I do this? How do I do that? And that's why in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I said the most dangerous words are, I can't. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point, you've stopped. And then the next word becomes, how can I? And that was one of the most valuable lessons my rich dad taught me, because he was a man who had nothing also. But I think the problem today is too many people think that the college degree is going to get them past I can't. So no, it actually makes you more stupid.
Right.
You know, yeah. Because you actually think that college degree, you know something. But the lesson I learned from that real estate class for nothing down in 1973 was he said, your education begins when you walk out the door. Mm-hmm. And so for all the college graduates out there, do you walk out into a job or do you walk into the abyss? And I think you and I like the abyss.
That's right.
It's more fun.
And you feel as though you've got more control over it. If you've got a lot of confidence in your decision-making ability,
correct,
then it fits your personality much better. I mean, a lot of people ask me, how did you decide to become an entrepreneur? And I'm like, I didn't really decide. I'm like, let's make some t-shirts and see if I can sell them, because I don't want to be broke. And let's just make it happen. It wasn't really a conscious decision. It's just, there's an opportunity over there. Let's go try to make it happen and take advantage of it. But you know what you're saying, it reminded me of something I think we were talking about at dinner the other evening. And that is going back to real estate. Now with a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, which most Americans don't realize that is not a free market loan. That the free market would not come up with a 30-year loan, because no bank is going to give you that money for that long at a fixed rate of interest.
Correct.
Because they know most likely they're going to lose purchasing power to the rate of inflation. So that has to be subsidized by the government. Most people don't realize that. But you look at where interest rates are right now, and I mean, they're like, 2-3% you can get on like a rental property, or maybe 4%, something like that. But then you look at real estate, the asset itself in most markets is in a bubble. You know, prices are even higher than they were back in 2006, adjusted for inflation. So we're having that discussion. It's weird, because most people historically have seen the property as the asset and the debt as the liability. But now, especially with these 30-year fixed rate mortgages, the debt is the asset and the property is the actual liability.
Yeah, you got it.
Crazy, isn't it? So why don't you expand on that a little bit?
Well, if you look at a balance sheet, you know, income, you have asset and liability. In my head, what is the liability is cash.
Right, yeah.
And what's the asset is the debt. So all I'm looking for is an excuse for the banker to lend me the money.
Right.
And you know, like there's other guys like, I don't know, live debt free and all this. I go, are you crazy? See, debt is tax-free money. If you can understand that, it's tax-free money, you know, basically because in 71, when Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard, the US dollar became debt. And so the people that win are the people who take the time to understand debt, to learn how to use debt, how to secure debt, how to raise capital on debt. And on the other side is the person who went to school to get a job, and they work for money and then they pay taxes.
Yeah, that's right.
And right. A thing that I always talk about is real estate is a game of debt and taxes. The more debt I have, the less tax I pay. And it drives people crazy.
But they don't understand. I don't think they understand that concept, Robert. So there's a lot of things there. Just initially, if you get a loan, obviously you're not paying taxes on the money that you receive, and you can put that to work making positive cash flow. But also on the equity, if you hold that asset, and a lot of super rich guys do this. I don't know if you've done this, but I know Elon Musk does this. He'll buy, let's say. Or even better, he'll leverage money against his stock. So he won't sell his stock, so he doesn't have the capital gain. But then he'll borrow money against the stock, and that's what he'll use to fund his lifestyle. So he doesn't need to have an income. So he never pays taxes because he never sells to have the capital gain. And those are the dots that I think most people don't connect.
Yes. Yes. And people say, well, do you sell your real estate? Do you sell your gold? Do you sell your silver? Do you sell your Bitcoin? No. So I have to pay taxes.
That's right. Yeah, there you go.
I would rather find another property or a business or something to borrow money. Because remember this, debt is tax-free money. And when it goes to negative, we'll probably go into negative 4% interest rate before this whole thing stops, before the hemorrhaging stops. So the person that's being murdered is mom and pop who are saving money. You know, if there's a balance sheet, the liability is cash, especially today.
You're right.
If they're printing so much, and they have to print more, you know that, I know that. They have to print so much cash, and these people are trying to save it. It's nuts.
Whereas
cash is the liability, debt is the asset. So the skill of the entrepreneur is to figure out why, what somebody will give me money for to buy my asset. And that's why real estate has traditionally, and I think it is still the best. I can go to my banker and I have a $30 million property and they salivate because they make money on the debt. Whereas the other people are trying to get out of debt. It's opposite in thinking.
And also too, one thing I want to point out, Robert, is if you have debt on a property, I know there's a loan to value ratio and whatnot, but let's just say you've got 100%. You have the a property, you've got 100% equity and you borrow 100% against it. So you got a $30 million property, the bank gives you $30 million. So now you got the $30 million in your pocket that you can go use somewhere else, but you've got positive cash flow, let's say coming in from that property. If the property goes down in value, by let's say 50%, what do you care? You're not selling. You don't care what the bid is on the property, and you've got that $30 million, that equity in your pocket, probably, well, not in cash, but you've got it allocated somewhere else, generating more positive cash flow in an asset that could potentially be cheap instead of in a bubble. So it really limits the downside. And you get to a point where if you set up your portfolio properly, if prices go up or down, it doesn't matter. It's like owning a McDonald's. Do you care if your broker comes to you and says, oh, you know what? You paid $1 million for that McDonald's 10 years ago, but now because interest rates went up, you could only get $950,000. You'd be like, who cares? Why are you even telling me this? I grew the profits from $100,000 up to $250,000 a year. This thing's a cash cow. I don't care what someone would give me on the open market. But see, I don't think people really understand that.
No, because they've been taught to save money and get out of debt. That's opposite. But that's not to say you just jump out there, because real estate is like a suicide mission also. If you buy a bad property, it's like being the skipper of a Titanic. You'll go down with it, you know, if you over leverage and things like this. So that's why, you know, I started with a little $18,000 unit back in 1973. And the last deal I just closed was $110 million. But the property didn't go up, but my education went up. Like I kept practicing, kept learning. And what goes up is your intelligence.
There you go.
Your IQ. But when a person is told, well, stay out of debt and save money, your IQ goes down. It's opposite. And that's what's hard to explain to someone. And I don't mean to say just jump out there and buy something, but it takes planning and experience. I made mistakes and things like this, but that's how you get smarter. But our schools punish you for making mistakes. That's why school teachers are poor. They punish people for making mistakes. How else do you learn?
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
And I think if you stop trying to answer the question, how can I get this done? Going back to the earlier part of our conversation, it starts, if you stop trying to answer that question, I think your belief that you can't get it done becomes further reinforced. It's almost like a muscle you have to exercise.
Right.
the more you do it, the better you're going to be. And if you don't do it for 20 years, it's going to be almost impossible because you've built up this belief system that whether it's X, Y, or Z, it cannot be done. So why try?
Well, what you're saying is exactly correct, because my best friend just sold his business for $2 billion. $2 billion. Hmm. He's now more afraid than ever before. But he made it in apartment houses.
Yeah, right.
But now he went to muni bonds. But what's growing in him is his fear. What if I lose all this? What if I lose all this? And I keep saying to him, you keep saying that, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, right.
But what happens, the real thing here is, I don't know, you know, I like pictures. But this here is what I call our four intelligences, you know, mental, emotional, spiritual, physical.
Right.
It's emotional that gets most people. They're so afraid of making mistakes. And nobody wants to make a mistake. But as the fear continues to increase, this gets the emotion of fear gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And then it stops them from doing something. Do you know what I mean? It's like when you play golf, it's a 10-foot putt. And in your mind, it's an easy putt, but the emotions say, don't miss the ball, you know?
Yeah, but Robert, you have to visualize. You know, I
that's what I'm saying.
You know, Kim plays golf. I've played golf here and there. But you have to hit, to play golf well, when you get down into the low handicaps, or you're shooting in maybe even in the 60s, you know, below par, you right. have to, prior to each shot, you have to stand behind the ball. And you have to visualize the exact shot you want to hit, whether you want to hit a draw, whether you want to hit a little cut in there. You have to visualize the ball going up and landing right next to the pin or right in the middle of the fairway. If you can't see it happening, it'll never happen. And it's like a quote that I can't recall exactly, but I'm paraphrasing. And I read this when I was very, very young, and it stuck with me my entire life. It's, the body cannot achieve what the mind cannot conceptualize.
Well, that's why that's this here. When this is a golfer's model,
right?
You know, like you know, look at Tiger Woods. Physically, he was beat up, you know, because his back was gone, and then emotionally, he gets hammered because of his philandering and all this stuff. And
yeah,
game goes down, but the guy comes back. You know, I saw him on the 16th hole at the Phoenix Open. He missed an easy shot, you know, but his game was so bad that he was going down, because I think spiritually he was beaten.
Right.
And now he comes back to win the Masters. So that's why this is kind of a golf. It's not really just a golfer's model, but it's a human model. But what happens for most people, exactly what you say, their mind says, don't make mistakes. If you lose money, you're a loser. And your mind just doesn't stop. And then the emotion kicks in, and the physical free, you know, choke.
Yeah, right.
You know, a 10-foot putt. A 10-foot putt's one of the toughest putts there is, as you know. I mean, it's not close enough to be easy, but it's far enough to be hard. And if you don't get that mind under control, you're finished. Right.
Yeah. You know? But yeah, and it applies to making money. It applies to making everything. Money. It applies to investing. You have to be able to visualize it happening.
Mind
first before it actually comes to fruition.
Well, even I've lost so much money in my lifetime, you know, like, but it turns out to be a good thing if spiritually I can get the lesson from it.
There you go. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that's what I say. I think Tiger Woods is the greatest athlete of our times. But when I saw how bad off he was on the 16th of the Phoenix Open, and then he comes back to take the Masters, and holy mackerel, spiritual. It wasn't anything else at that point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, it reminds me of another one of my favorite athletes, Conor McGregor in the UFC. I remember he lost, I think, for the first time in the UFC, and his coach said, we do two things, either we win or we learn.
Right.
Those are your two options.
Right. And you win every way.
Yeah.
You know, you always win spiritually. And when I look back upon my this last deal I just did for $110 million, we lost the deal before that. But it was the losing of that deal was a deal at, near Trump's place in Doral, Florida. Hmm. We lost it. And my wife, Kim, who is the genius when it comes to real estate, she found this deal right next to our house in Phoenix, you know, and she just put 110 million bucks in her pocket. But if we hadn't made the mistake, she'd never have made it.
You're right.
And that's why I have this huge chip on my shoulder against school teachers, because my whole family are school teachers. They cannot control this or this, and it affects what they do. And what they always, well, you need job security. Now you must have a pension, you know, da, 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 da. And it's because this is dead.
Right.
They have no confidence in themselves. They don't trust in, there's a God out there. There's something better for you to do. So anyway, that's why I've been on. My first book ever, George, was, if you want to be rich and happy, don't go to school. it's just because they pounded me for being stupid constantly. I just kept making mistakes. I remember the teacher said, I said, why do I have an F on this paper? I flunked out of high school twice in English because I can't write. But it wasn't that I couldn't write, it's I couldn't spell. And now we have spell check and all that stuff, you know. I said, well, it's a very uncreative person who can't spell a word three or four different ways. So gave me an F.
You're using your imagination, right?
Either an entrepreneur or you're not. And the entrepreneur's got to have that spirit.
Yeah. All right. So let's hear the story of Bitcoin. How did you stumble across that? I know you've become very bullish on it. What's the backstory there?
Well, it's the same as anything else. If you don't understand it, buy a little of it. Does that, you know what I mean? And I talk to guys, like I talk to guys your age, especially. Like I talked to Anthony Pompliano and all these other characters, you know, Peter Schiff hates Bitcoin. So I talked to him also, you know, I just get the different points of view on it. And finally it was Anthony Pompliano who just said, well, I said, what do you think about it? He says, find out. I said, that's the same advice I'd give anybody. So I bought it at, I think, 9,000 a coin.
Mm-hmm.
I stacked up on it. And now I wish I'd bought more. That's how you learn. Do you know what I mean? It's how do you learn to play golf? Well, you buy a golf club and a golf ball and you go out there and you putz around for a while. But most people never buy the golf club or the golf ball.
Yeah.
Nor do they take lessons. Nor do they practice. But, so you know, it's not that I'm an expert on Bitcoin, but I now can talk to guys who know something about Bitcoin.
Yeah, but you get the concept. You get the concept. And you put it into terms that just everyone gets intuitively. And what I mean by that is, remember when we were out at the Red Pill Expo and you were on stage and you were talking about gold and Bitcoin, and you said that gold is God's money and Bitcoin is the people's money.
Correct.
What do you mean by that?
Well, gold and silver have been here since the earth was formed. And I've started a gold mining company in China and they took it. And I started a silver mining company in Argentina and still have that one. But they're here in the earth and they're getting more scarce because of counterparty. I mean, the countries don't want, it's getting harder and harder to mine that stuff.
Right.
So the reason I like Bitcoin is because I'm anti the Fed. I think that, you know, the Fed is an organization that takes from the poor and gives to the rich.
Yep.
So that's why the stock market is so high. I think that's criminal. So I counter that by teaching people about money. I'm not going to change the Fed. That my opening statement was, who gives a fuck what the Fed is doing? What are you going to do about it? So that was my thing. You know, so with me, once I understood who the Fed was from Vietnam, and I've been buying gold and silver for years, is I don't trust the Fed, but I'm doing something about it. And a lot of the people, you know, at the Red Pill were trying to change the Fed. Good luck.
Yeah.
This will change my ex-wife's mind about me. She's not.
That's a good analogy. Yeah. So but one thing that fascinates me about what you do and how you've been so successful. And I think every entrepreneur has to learn this skill set. And maybe everyone that makes a lot of money has to learn this skill set. And that's, you have to recognize what you don't know. And you have to recognize your strengths and your weaknesses. And then you have to surround yourself with individuals who are better at certain things, or maybe even much better than you are. And then you have to leverage their skill sets to make you more money.
Right.
And a very easy example that most people will recognize is just this last thing that I've done with Rebel Capitalist Pro. And that's the investment membership site I have. But listen, I'm like you. I almost flunked out of high school. You actually achieved it. So you're doing better. You got the job done. But I'm by no means, you know, a researcher. I would be a disaster at that. So what I did is I said, okay, I need to team up with someone like Lynn Alden, who has me by 100 IQ points on a bad day. And because she's a genius at the research component of it. And then I need to bring on someone like Chris McIntosh that's forgotten more about investing than I'll ever know. And bring them part of the team so I can leverage their skills to make this product a lot better and bring in a lot more revenue. But you've done the exact same thing. So maybe tell us the story of how you came to that conclusion and how you've been able to do it so well.
Well, when I was a kid, I started working with my rich dad when I was 9. I had to work for him for free. He said, you work for free because if I pay you, you think like an employee. So I worked for free. But one of the bennies of working for free, I got to sit in on his monthly Saturday breakfast meetings. And at his Saturday meetings, he had his accountant, his attorney, his banker, his real estate agent, his general managers and all this. And they all sat there and he said, this is my problem. And they'd all chip in and tell him how to solve his problem. So the banker had one idea, the accountant had one idea, the attorney had another idea and all this. So I realized then that capitalism is really a team sport. In school, they tell you if you do that, it's called cheating. So when I went home and I'm 9 or 10 years old, here's my poor dad, a PhD from Stanford, University of Chicago, and Northwestern. He's trying to solve how to, you know, he's $300 short for the month. Right. And he sits there by himself because that's what academics do. They sit there and they study by themselves. And my rich dad said, this is my problem. Give me some ideas. And so he pulled it in for his team. So today, you know, if you look at the Rich Dad Advisors books, right, like Kenny McElroy is my expert on real estate. He knows more about real estate than I will ever know. But I counter him with my tax guy, with my attorneys, and all the other guys that make the thing work. You see, it's called synergy. You know, when there's 4 asset classes, there's business, real estate, paper, which is stock, bonds, mutual fund, savings, and then there's commodities, gold and silver. And most people are only in the paper. They have a 401k, an ETF, a mutual fund. But what you're doing is a synergy of business, real estate, paper, and commodities. It's the synergy that makes it work. But to have a synergy to make it work, you have to have a team because you can't know everything. So the average person only has a financial planner at the most, who has only one vested interest, is to sell you something.
Yeah, right.
And the reason I knew that so well was in 74, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I got a job with Xerox because I had to learn how to sell. I'm a very shy person. So my rich dad says, if you can't sell, you'll never be an entrepreneur. So it was a skill. So I got a job with Xerox in downtown Honolulu. And that year, 74, was when the 401k came out. So suddenly they're recruiting anybody who could fog a mirror to push these things called 401ks,
right,
or something like that. You know, I don't quite remember. So I'd go to these, just like you, I'd be curious. I'd go and find out what all these different financial planning companies were saying and all this stuff. So I sit in the audience and say, we're looking for guys who can sell. So they were pitching this 401k. And I sat there and I was already making money in real estate. And the 401k made no sense to me at all. It made no sense to me. Now, if I hadn't done real estate prior to that, I might have got sucked in.
You're right.
That makes sense to you. But yeah, because I had a different way of solving my financial challenges and solutions and all this stuff. So the trouble with a 401k is if you lose everything, you haven't learned anything.
Yeah.
You know, when I lose a piece of real estate, I got a lot smarter. And when I lose a business, I've gotten a lot smarter because I'm actively involved in it. Whereas when people lose everything in the stock market, they really haven't learned anything. Yeah, you know, it's almost like gold, silver, and Bitcoin. You haven't really done anything to create the asset. But when you're in a business or you're creating, creating real estate and all this, you're an active learner. You're actually participating in the process of creating the asset. So that's why when somebody says, go to school, get a job, work hard, save money, and put your money in a 401k, you're not learning anything financially. Yeah. And I have a team. I have the smartest team I can find because that's how I get rich, because it's called synergy, results beyond the ordinary. And it's almost spiritual. My team comes together, because I trust these guys with my heart, everything. We trust each other. And my doctors are part of the team because
I was just gonna say about when we met for lunch the other day and you had your whole crew around there and you've got your doctor. I mean, people don't understand how far you take the concept of team.
And then, it's health, wealth, and happiness. It comes down to those three things. I'm very proactive on health, wealth, and happiness. And that's the difference. And most people are passive. Do you know what I mean? They go see their doctor once a year for an annual checkup. Well, I see my doctor twice a week. And it's not that I need to, but it's part of the process. So she's always checking me, blood tests, monitoring it. It's no different than looking at your financials.
Yeah, that's a really interesting concept too. When you're talking, what was going through my mind is a question, probably the question I get the most. And it's that they're already stuck in a 401k and they don't know what to do. They're like, okay, I've stumbled across what your YouTube channel, or I've stumbled across the Rich Dad channel or one of Robert's books. I get it, but I'm 50 years old. I've got a wife, or I've got a husband. I've got kids, they're in private school. I've got this 401k. If I take the money out, I'm going to get this huge tax hit. And since my employer is matching it to such a great degree, I don't have a choice. I'm stuck. I'm between a rock and a hard place where I just have to keep doing exactly what I've done. Although now my eyes have been opened. Right. And I'm sure you get that question constantly. So how do you typically answer that question?
Well, it's a complex question, but the reason I love YouTube, even though they shut me down at times, is that they have some great teachers on there. And I listen to both sides. Like this guy, Richard Wolff or something, he's a hardcore socialist.
Yeah, the Marxist. Yeah, I actually interviewed him.
You interviewed him?
Yeah. Yeah, he's actually a really nice guy.
Yeah, drives me crazy. But I've listened to him twice now, but I'm finally understanding where we agree on things. So the beauty of YouTube and this age we're in, you can get more and more information. But before you change your 401k, you better figure out what you want to be good at. So what you did was, I wanted to be an investor and I want to be an entrepreneur. That's a whole different educational process.
That's why
I was saying that when I met you in person, you're always so curious. And most people are superficial. How's the weather? How the kids and all this? I just want to know, did you know about this? We never stopped talking about what we saw going on and sharing knowledge and all this stuff. Whereas most people are passive on their learning. And if you're going to be passive, stay with the 401k. That's it. But if you're going to go down that rabbit hole, it's a big rabbit hole. A lot of people never come back.
Yeah. But I think the main takeaway is just to, if you think something can't be done, figure out a way to get it done. I mean, people ask me what the secret is of being an entrepreneur. And I say, well, it's tough, but if you have to narrow it down to a couple things, number one would be you got to solve problems. You have to be able to solve problems and you got to be able to manage people. And, but it starts with that problem solving component. And most people, I see them and, you know, family members and friends, and it's just, they've got the football game on Saturday. They've got to take the kids to soccer practice, and it just seems like too big of a hurdle. So they end up just shrugging their shoulders, giving up, and then rationalizing their decisions.
Correct.
And I think it's all about mindset. And it goes back to that little chart that you had, that piece of paper. And people, they have to start visualizing success first and foremost, and then taking action and not worrying about whether or not you're making a mistake. Because even if you do make a mistake, you're winning because you're learning from that and getting a step closer to your end goal. I think that's the main takeaway.
Yep. And you know, that's like, I'm very shy. I couldn't sell and all this. And so that's my rich dad said, I could go fly for the airlines, you know, big deal. I hate it. But anyway, so you can be an entrepreneur, learn how to sell. So I get a job with Xerox, and immediately I start to fail because I can't sell. And if you can't sell, you don't eat.
Yeah, right.
And so I go, and then they're going to fire you. They keep you for so long, then they just boot you out. So I saw my rich dad because I said, I'm failing. So he asked me one question. He says, how many sales calls do you make a day? You know, I said, on a good day, 3. He says, that's why you're failing, because you're not failing fast enough.
Hmm.
What?
Right.
It's the opposite of my rich dad. My poor dad, the school teacher, don't make any mistakes. My rich dad says, you're not making enough mistakes. And that's the difference there. So he says, find a way you can fail faster. So I found this nonprofit charity, and they were looking for guys who would dial for dollars. I said, well, that's a good way I can fail faster. So I would leave downtown Honolulu, and I'd go up the street to this charity and sit there. They put you in front of this phone bank, and I dial for charity dollars. And my goal was to get turned down 30 times a night. you know, George, there's nothing. If you're shy, rejection is 10 times worse. If you know, you know, it's just horrifying. So I'd sit there and I'd dial, no. But ironically, my sales at Xerox went up.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because I was confronting the emotion of getting rejection after rejection. And then, you know, there's physical and spiritual. So when people ask me, you know, how did an ugly guy like you meet Kim? I mean, I get asked that a lot. So what the shit she doing with you? But it works. So you can ask her. She says, you never stopped asking.
Yeah.
I asked her 10, you know, in sales, the teacher could ask 10 different ways, 10 different, you know, this way, that way, this way, this. I just kept asking her. And finally one night she says, I have a boyfriend. I said, I don't care. I said, I'm not looking to get married. I just want you to go out with me one night. And after like 6 months, this is the worst part about it. So I couldn't figure it out. So every salesman knows you better ask for a referral. So I said, I better find out who her friends are. So I found out who her friends are. And I talked to the people she worked with and said, well, do you know who her best friend is? Who Kim's best friend is? I said, no. He said, Kim's best friend is your ex-girlfriend.
Really?
What? Yeah, Karen is her best friend.
Hmm.
So the only problem was Karen hated me. So.
Not a good referral.
A charge. I had to then kind of make amends with Karen. You know, so
I'm
on the phone talking to Karen. She says, get away, you scumbag, you lying dog. You know, you're not, I would never recommend you to anybody and all this. Hey, no. So that once Karen says, okay, I'll put in the good word for you. She says, I said, what is it going to be? She says, well, she says, you're not boring. I said, okay, good. That works, you know. So Karen calls Kim, her best friend. And so Kim says, well, okay, I'll go out with you once. It took 6 months, George. And we went out that one night. We've been together ever since.
Yeah.
But I think that's where people quit. And it's easy to quit. You know what I mean? It's easy. Anybody can quit. Yeah. But to keep going, like Tiger did, you know, to keep going, to come back and win is spiritual. That's the difference.
There you go. Great, great, great stories, Robert. Man, that was such an awesome conversation. I always enjoy it so much. It's always just an honor to get the opportunity to sit down and talk to you, whether it's over Zoom like this or at dinner or at lunch, anything. So for all my viewers who want to find out more about what you do, I've been referring a lot of people to your YouTube channel. Should they go over there to your website? Yeah. What would you suggest?
That's the best place because we're kind of trapped in this rooms now, you know, so it's good.
So probably the YouTube channel is the best?
Yeah, that's where I'm most active right now.
Okay, yeah, so that's the, I believe the channel is called Rich Dad.
Good, because I'm still doing my seminars, but in one day, I did one in Europe, one in Mexico, and one in China. It's really, you know, there's always something good out of something bad.
Yeah, glass half full, that's right.
It doesn't stop you, okay? So anyway, it's my pleasure too, George. That's why I started with, I just noticed you when we're not on these calls. You're always curious, always asking, always wanting to learn. And there's other people, as you know, we go out with and we talk about the weather. And that's fine too. Or politics, which is a waste of time. But this is more fascinating, is how we learn, how we get ahead, how do we support other people. That's what's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate your time. I cannot wait to do it again.
Thank you, George. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.